truthfully, what happens is, as children grow up, we start to educate them progressively from the waist up. And then we focus on their heads, and slightly to one side.
I think in the old days, you know, you were better off. Because nowadays, they're all specialists. Everyone's becoming better and better, and less and less. And eventually, someone's going to be superb at nothing.
Our education system has mined our minds in the way that we've strip-mined the earth for a particular commodity. And for the future, it won't serve us. We have to rethink the fundamental principles on which we're educating our children.
We're not here to tell everybody that they're wrong and we're right. We're not saying that we have all the answers, but we'd like to present a different way of looking at it.
Hello, listeners. We are with none other than the Makerspace God.
It's Makerspace Man now. That's my new name.
It was God first, and then it became man. Yeah, God made man.
Man, and then maybe God in the future. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Listen to this. Well,
It's growing. My ego.
Certain things are growing, and I feel very privileged, actually, as a teacher, to talk about this on a podcast. This movement, it's none other than the
Makerspace movement.
Yeah. The Makerspace movement, yeah. Which alluded to very in the previous episode when we talked about your teaching, Adam. It's not a political party, no. In any shape or form, but it's an amazing educational movement that's sweeping through schools now, and you're playing a big part in that internationally in Zhuhai. First of all, tell us, what is the Makerspace movement? What is Makerspace?
Sure. That's usually the first question I get is, what is Makerspace?
Is that too boring for you? Would you like me to...
No. Because, you know, I mean, I originally had to look it up myself when I started doing this whole thing. But Makerspace is just essentially, it's a place you can go and you can do all kinds of things. You can build, you can sew, you can cook, you can program. So it's just a space to create, basically. There's no really definition, because every makerspace is unique in what it's fitting its population or where it's at and what restrictions are. So it's just a place to create something, basically. In essence, is creation.
As a kid who grew up in England, I remember we had design technology class,
okay,
or DT, and we go there, and then maybe for one semester, we didn't call it semester's term, we'd have wood. We do woodwork.
Sure.
And then one, we do graphics. I used to like graphics, you know, with the graphics board and the pencil and things like that. And then one, we do metalwork.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a cooking element to it.
I had something similar too.
Right. Essentially, that's what I link with a makerspace. But I first came across an actual makerspace in, of course, your school where you are now. Mm-hmm. Because right. You've been the maverick teacher who's come along and put this in place here.
Yeah.
But the Makerspace movement, which is about this place where you can just go and create, comes from where?
I guess it's probably coming from the point of view. You're talking about all these different subjects of doing woodworking and all this stuff. And I think it's just the evolution of putting them all together into one place. And I think originally the Makerspace movement kind of started with outside of education. So it started with community members just not having access to tools and resources and having a place where they could go and actually rent out a place so they could do all these things, these ideas they had, and who knows where they led. Sometimes it was purely for fun, sometimes it was a business reason. And then it just seemed like a natural fit for education. It's fairly recent that it's really started popping up, especially it started mostly in the United States, just popping up in a lot of the libraries and schools and even museums
and libraries
spaces. Yeah, so it's been, I would say, probably only in the last maybe 10 years at the most that they've started to see some of these, like they have different names, whether they're hacker spaces or maker spaces or creation zones. So just this idea of creation, and I think it comes from maybe education is kind of steered away from those hands-on skills that maybe we had as children. A lot of the newer generation doesn't have some of those skills in place. A lot of those programs have gone away, the wood shops and the drafting and the metalwork. I mean, you don't see those as much in schools anymore. So
I mean, where have they gone? Have they gone down to the kind of more vocational college, like what we'd call it in England, a college, where you go and learn a certain skill, a manual.
You know, I think everybody's been taught, you know, they have to go to university or college, and I think they're just they're just telling you know go get these degrees. And And some of those, you know, I've heard there's a huge demand now for basic things like plumbers and truck drivers and things like that. So I think some of the original just, and even if you're not doing it for a career, but just you know, to fix something in your house, you know, a lot of the newer, younger generation, I can speak from just knowing, is can't do some of those basic things. So I think it's a perfect fit. Besides also leading into some more technical careers that you can go into. You know, or just doing it for yourself, for intrinsic motivation of, I want to figure something out, or I want to just build this because it's fun, you know.
I love it. And I mean, you know, a kid in school can go through and be able to do an essay on comparing the character of this and how it's portrayed and this and compare, but they can't change a light bulb.
No, exactly.
It makes so much sense, this idea of a makerspace, whatever you want to call it, because essentially everything is connected. True. And when that plumber who we don't seem to have any more of, does plumbing, he is using math, and he is using science, and he's using English, and he's using lots of those subjects that he would have gone through wherever he went through for school.
Sure.
So it makes absolute sense that there should be a practical zone within a school, like the ones we used to have, but just a little bit more, let's integrate it instead of having, right, you're doing woodwork now and you're doing that now.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you say the whole idea of STEM?
Or science,
STEAM. Right, and now STEAM, because they're incorporating art, which I think is great, again, is pushing this, it's not separation anymore, it's bringing it in and seeing it's how it can actually make a better thing by being all together.
Yeah. I think when you look at what students are doing, you can see they're doing all of these things that we just talked about in sometimes one project, whether it's working with tools or bringing math in or writing about it or putting art into it. It makes so much sense to have it all in one place, because you really can pick out, you know, not to use acronyms all the time, but you can really pick out the STEAM in almost every project that kids are working on nowadays, if they're allowed to. Or they're given the freedom to do those kind of things.
And the kids don't even need to know that they're doing STEAM.
No, they don't even know. It just happens organically.
Right, and they enjoy it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's fun. Like, you know, I became one of the most popular teachers in the school, not because I'm actually good or whatever, or a
well,
nice
no, you're
guy.
Not good, you're golf.
but just because I simply gave them access to having so much fun. When they're learning and makerspace to them. I mean, if you want to reward kids, just tell them, oh, I'll give you an extra half an hour in makerspace. It's like, you know, they'll be on their best behavior for the week for it. So.
I've seen it. My son is, I think it must be one of his most used words in the house, makerspace. I went to makerspace today. Look what I've done in makerspace. Yeah. Oh, Dad, I got this from makerspace. Oh, teacher Domenico, Adam's let me. And it's wonderful. And when you see that, you know you're onto something.
Yeah,
and that's why I believe, and why we're doing this pod today, is we need to spread this movement. Listeners, now, if you don't know about Makerspace, type it in. If you type Makerspace in, Adam, you probably go to an organization, do you, in America?
No, there's not. That's the thing about Makerspace. It's so kind of still underground that you'll get a lot of websites that are talking about it. There's a Makerspace for Education website that's pretty good. Just Makerspace for Education. Google that. There's a TED Talk that pops up, I think, right away. That's great. You have to really do your research to start getting, and then, but there's not a main place.
It's not a main hub.
Yeah, there's not a main hub for it, which I think is great, because it can be so many different things. Yeah. It doesn't have to fit into like one, you know, mold or formula. So.
I absolutely love it. So let's explain, because this is a podcast, it's audio.
Yeah.
So just to get the imagination going a minute, where was the first makerspace you saw? Because I saw it in the place where you developed it, in that small little room, you know, a few years ago. But where was the first one you saw?
Google Images. literally.
But why did you think of looking at it? You didn't come across one in a school?
Because the director said, you know, he had heard about makerspaces from, you know, just being in education. And he said, you know, I have this idea of putting a makerspace in our library, in a small corner. And so I said, okay. And he said, you know, I know you're kind of a techie guy. You like gadgets and, you know, you're able to fix computers. And it's like, okay, well, sure. And so he said, would you like to take it on? And, you know, with anything in education, if somebody volunteers, then, you know, they're chosen and you can do go for it. But no, I was like, okay, sure. So, but the first thing I did was I went and Googled Makerspace. I'd never heard of the term Makerspace before. So, and what popped up was, you know, images of places in the Smithsonian and some beautiful schools. But the ideas behind them were, I was like, wow, this is kind of what I've been missing, I feel like. Because I was feeling kind of bored. In teaching, just like in general, like I do projects, but I couldn't take them to the next level because I didn't have access to these kind of places. So it was kind of like, you know, this is a project I can take on. But with anything that I take on, I usually go 100% into it. So, you know, as soon as I started researching more, it came clear to me that it couldn't be a corner in a makerspace based on our corner in a library. Based
yes.
On our space. We had to actually do a room. And so, you know, there was a lot of planning that went into it. And I had a good 4 months or 5 months before I had to actually open it up. So, you know, I went back and forth with the director asking for more money and more resources. And eventually, you know, it came to a smallish size room, but it had all the things we needed in it. And I was able to open it up at the beginning of the next school year. And it was immediately a success when I got everybody excited about it. I can talk about how we introduced it. But that was a huge hit, and that's how I got started with it.
And it really was, and it really is. And first of all, the director at the time was
Cliff.
Okay, so Mr. Guy's Pope, which actually, listeners, we did an interview with. It was on the China Jedi show a few years ago. So if you're interested in that, but really, I think we have to thank him for putting you on to that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I had his full support, and you know, he had an idea, and he gave the nice thing was that he gave me a complete freedom of being able to do what I want with him. You know, I bounced ideas off him, and his usual answer was, yeah, it sounds great. I love what I hear. So.
Which is exactly what you want in a boss.
Yeah, which is exactly, as long as you're doing the right thing and you keep hearing those.
And you're not having to pay for it. Wonderful.
Yeah. So he kept signing the checks and everything went on.
Okay, so you first opened it in that little room, and I remember it.
Yeah.
When was this? Let's go back. A couple of years ago?
This is this school year, 2019. It's a bit 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah, so this is our second year. Second year, yeah.
Coming up to the end of the year.
Yeah,
your second year.
It seems like it's been over for a long time, but it hasn't actually.
Now, let's go back then to when you were researching it and you were getting it started.
Yeah.
Because the question is, how did you get it started? And you've given us a bit of a preface to that.
Sure.
With how the director told you, go and have a look at it.
Yeah.
And here's some money. But essentially, like, again, for the listeners, what is in a makerspace? I mean, if you just imagine, you come in that small room, what have you got?
Well, if you walk into the room, and I have a tour on my, I have a Prezi introduction that I give presentation-wise when I'm talking about makerspaces and a video tour. But basically, I'm thinking through it as I give the tour, because I've done it a lot.
Can we link? I think what we should do to the show notes...
It's
a link to your Prezi.
Yeah, I think it'd be great. Because then people can see what it looks like. I think it's great.
Because I think you've really got to see it. They're just wonderful.
Yeah, I can tell. It's really hard when you talk about it versus when you see it. It's really a different dynamic. But basically, when you walk in, there's all these different spots kind of the makerspace. And I like to categorize it as one area is the tech zone, which has the computers.
Tech zone.
So that's kind of the programming area. We've got all-in-one computers. You can do 3D printing on them, and it's a base to kind of do some of the other projects. And then you continue on. You have the 3D printing area, so it has the two 3D printers with all the materials you need, and it's tied in with the tech zone. Kids can make all kinds of things in there. And then as you kind of keep going, you have a kit area, which is really for kits that are activities that teachers can just pull from to do projects. They don't have to think about them or plan. Things like there's these cardboard screws that you can build forts out of, or there's these crafty beads that you can melt together to make keychains, or there's magnet kits and things like that. So just stuff you can pull from. And then we have the art area, which has all the different supplies you need, like paints and paintbrushes and puffy balls and pipe cleaners and all kinds of
puffy balls.
I guess that would be the technical
pink, pink puffy balls.
Yeah,
pink permanganated puffy balls.
Yeah, there's pink ones in there for sure. I know way more about crafts and arts and supplies than I ever thought I'd be possible with. Literally, probably have 50 bins of different craft supplies. And then we have a tool section that has all kinds of tools, from power tools to hand tools. And it's always growing, so we're always adding more stuff to the tool section. And then we have a robotics area. We have the Lego Mindstorm robotics area. We have a sewing zone area. We have a filmmaking area. And I could keep going on. And now we just introduced and unrolled this week the kitchen zone, which we have a cooking area.
Kitchen zone.
Yeah, so literally it's like, you know, it just keeps growing. And that's what's really awesome about it is you can... We have an idea and teachers are interested in it, we can transform the makerspace into whatever.
Good things just always grow, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's just a space for whatever you want to do fun stuff in, really.
Are you going to take everyone's jobs then? Is that... Because I'm thinking, you went through the pink and fluffy...
No, I can't. There's no way, because I can't actually teach the students in that zone all at the same time. Teachers do amazing things within their classes in that area.
Right, so they come and... Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they'll bring their classes down there, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah. Now...
It's an area for them to be able to be better teachers, I would say.
Art teacher, for example, has her own art room, does she not?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So the art stuff in the makerspace is the makerspace art stuff.
Correct, yeah.
The art stuff in the art room is the art stuff. Is there a... You know, because I've been in schools where it's like, you're not allowed to... You know, the...
Shh, like...
Shh. What's that word?
Sure. Yeah. No, the art teacher is really, she's really awesome. She does really great stuff with the art students. And we're all like, we like to, you know, bounce ideas off of each other or just show her what we're doing,
Brilliant.
Show each other what we're doing. So she's a very big supporter. We always joke that, she always jokes that I'm trying to take her job.
Oh, so there is
yeah,
a sense.
Yeah,
okay,
just as a joke, but yeah, she's amazing. So yeah, so right now, I mean, it's still very, very separate. It's a very separate kind of area.
Well, it's on a different floor, isn't it?
Yeah, different floor. Yeah, different things they're learning, all kinds of stuff going on. So, yeah.
Now, Makerspace Man, or MM, you mentioned about, I think it was about 8 or 9 different zones.
Yeah.
We call them zones.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we were saying sort of 2 years ago, you were in a small room that you could hardly swing a cat in, although a student could throw a hammer at you.
I think it was only like 5 meters by 5 meters at the moment.
Yeah, that was the room you had the hammer thrown
at.
Yeah. And that wasn't a makerspace, was it?
No, it was the makerspace, yeah. Yeah, no, that's why the hammer was there.
Well, that's what happens when you give...
Kids,
you know,
hammers.
Right, exactly. Some would say. These are the risks you take with growth and evolution.
Somebody has to do it.
But you couldn't have got all... Well, you can't get all those zones into that small room.
No way. So that's why it has to depend on your space. So, you know, the makerspace, I said earlier, fits, you know, it has to fit your school, and there's different areas and requirements and all that. So, you know, every makerspace can look so different. But we're fortunate that we had a big room. We have 2 big rooms and an area to do all this stuff with, and... You know, it just depends on what people are interested in. And I wouldn't have opened the kitchen unless the elementary teacher said, you know, hey, we're doing more cooking and we want to do an after-school activity of cooking. And we're doing cooking all the time, but we don't really want to do it anymore because we can't find, there's no place to do it. And so that's just kind of how things kind of evolve in your makerspace.
Well, I probably think most of the listeners who've never heard of makerspace, Adam, mm-hmm. are thinking... This is all a little bit too much. So I want to backtrack a little
bit. I don't
want
to make people's heads spin, because I know it makes my head spin sometimes too.
Wonderful as it is, let's backtrack, because for someone listening now who's in a school, who's creative, who's having problems with, I want to do cooking or I want to build some crafts, but I've got no resources, they've got some in that room.
Yeah.
Make a space, okay, cool. And they look it up and they see, hang on, this could be the answer, the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
But where do you start? Because you're not in a week going to have 9 zones, robotics, 3D printers, things like that. So what? Use your story. Like, how do you start this simply? What would you recommend?
Okay, so basically, you have to do your research first. And it took me probably 3 months of just looking and researching about all the different things that are available. So, you know, the key to getting it started is to research and plan and not just... throw a bunch of stuff in a room and start with it right away, because it's not going to work. I mean,
right.
You have to have a plan for it. Basically, when I went into it was I did my research. I figured out just things that needed to be in there, which isn't actually that important. What really was important was getting everybody on board, meaning the teachers. If you don't have support from the teachers and the school, then nobody's going to use it, which is not what's the point of it, is that everybody uses it. So I really went into, my biggest concern was, okay, how do I get teachers feeling comfortable about this space? Because, you know, to be honest, you know, not all teachers are, you know, want to try the new stuff,
yeah,
or want to, you know, they don't want to deviate from their normal day, and which is understandable because it takes time. And so I told our then director that, you know, we needed to do a lot of training and introduce it very softly before we actually even open it. So
okay,
the first meeting we had for me to just say, hey, this is what we're doing a makerspace, besides explaining what it was just to throw out a bunch of these activities I had planned for that I would do in the makerspace. Just fun little simple things, you know, make a little robot, build a little cardboard house, make some slime, just do some fun little things that I would maybe just introduce kids with. And I just literally, like I said, here's some things, here's some directions, and play with it for half an hour, and then we'll talk about it. Mm-hmm. And everybody was having so much fun. Just, you know, normally staff meetings sit down, listen. They're all, like, you know, making and building and doing all this stuff.
This isn't a staff meeting.
This is a staff meeting, yeah.
Okay.
So this is just, and I literally just said, hey, a makerspace is this. Now here's these different stations, go play with them. And so then everybody kind of was immediately like, hey, this is fun. Like, I like this. This is cool. And then slowly over the next couple months, it was, okay, well, here's how we're going to introduce it to the students. Here's how you're going to be involved. And here's how we're going to proceed with, you know, helping you to be comfortable in the makerspace. And in the beginning, there's different phases that go into it. And the beginning phase of when we opened it was I called the exploratory phase. It's the first year is just literally getting people in the makerspace doing anything. It doesn't matter what. And so they become familiar with all the different tools and things in the makerspace. So every teacher had to come with their class a certain amount of periods per week. And we'd rotate classes, and then they would become familiar with how everything worked in there. And so I literally just use them as like assistants, and kind of we just so I said, if you have any ideas you want to bring in, or you want to, you know, teach something in your class, and I can find a project that matches it. You know, so if somebody was teaching something like states of matter, and we wanted to talk about solid states of matter or liquid states, then we can make jello or something like that and experiment with that.
Okay.
Or something like that. So just something fun. So anyways, the first year is the exploratory phase, and we got all the students and all the teachers through the makerspace multiple times per week all through the year, so they became super familiar with it and comfortable.
How much time a week were they coming? Like, I mean, minimum, you
they
said
would,
a couple times.
They
a
would
week.
Come in twice a week, and
okay,
we would rotate every 4 weeks for class. So it ended up being that they would be in there twice a week for 4 weeks, and then they might not be in there for another 8 weeks.
Oh,
come
I see, because another class would...
Yeah, because another couple classes would come through.
So give them a little taster.
Yeah, just a little taste, little fun things, not overwhelm them, you know, not feel like it was a burden. And this was during their extra time. They had, they call it a learning lab. So it wasn't impacting their time. Because the biggest thing teachers want to know was, well, are you going to take away or add more stuff to my plate? Because you don't, as a teacher, you don't want anything more thrown onto your plate. You've already got lots of things going on.
No. So they weren't coming with the students?
They would come in with their class.
They would come in.
Yeah,
because
okay, it's a learning lab is basically, it's almost like a study hall. Other places call
okay,
it a
okay,
study
okay, so
hall.
It is like a...
Yeah, it's just time you give extra teaching to. But you have a couple of those a period as an elementary teacher.
What would they normally do with that class then? Normally,
normally if students needed extra help.
So
or they
extra
needed,
coaching.
Yeah, they had extra coaching. Or you know, they needed to review something, and they have a couple of those per week, so you can kind of fill in some gaps there. So that was an easy time to use for that.
Now flip back.
Yeah.
That first staff meeting when you introduced it softly to the teachers,
mm-hmm,
it's a bit like the chicken and the egg, because did you have the makerspace ready, like something to show? Before
so,
you introduced
no, so yeah, I didn't. I get so you have to, like, when I went into it, I said, okay, I know this is going to be successful because I've done all this planning. I have all this stuff I'm ordering and I'm putting into a room, piled into a room with, like, in boxes. And nothing, it's not an actual space yet. It's just basically a room with stuff.
A lot of boxes, yeah.
Yeah, and then we're doing meetings in May, and the next year in August, we're going to open the makerspace. So nothing is, I'm just saying, like, here's the plan.
Okay.
And here's why, I gave all the reasons why it's after we played, if it's going to be successful. And, you know, and just talking about it, when you tell people what it is and how cool it is and how you can use it, people get excited, mm-hmm. you know, and they think, okay, and they're not quite sure how it's going to work, but you're not overwhelming them. You're just saying, hey, in August we're going to do this, you know, and I had the mentality, it was small, so it wasn't like, you know, hey, we're going crazy with this area. It's grown to what it is now because it's been so successful. So to introduce it slowly, I think, was key. Mm-hmm. And then once you do have it open, though, you have to make sure everything that you're going to be able to do in there is there. It's ready to go. It's organized, because that everything was labeled. I had all the basics that we needed for all the projects, and it wasn't that teachers were feeling like, oh, I need this, but it's not in there and stuff like that at first. So there's always something we wanted, dream items or tools or different activities, but we had a good base to start, which I think is really important with the makerspace in terms of supplies and items and a lot of this stuff we didn't just have to talk about challenges, but we don't have to actually buy. A lot of it was in the school already.
Well, that's there. So, you go. That's an interesting. What's the three R's? Recycle, reuse, and I can't remember.
Recycle, reuse, and
something else.
Yeah, I can't think.
I know they've clearly done a really bad branding on this, because no one can remember the third one.
Yeah,
it's probably the same as the two, but
recycle, I don't know.
Yeah, these. Yeah. Well, so, but Adam, when you introduced it to the teachers,
yeah,
you'd already done some ordering and boxes were there.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that was based on your research. It wasn't based on what the teachers wanted, right?
No, actually. I didn't actually, because, you know, sometimes when I ask too many people, I get too many responses back. And
you have to lead and put some type of framework.
Sometimes you just have to have, I think, a little bit of a vision to say, you know, like, I know this is going to be successful, but I need to have a plan that's going to make it successful. And so I was really looking, I didn't realize it at the time, but I was looking at least a year or two out to make it super successful. And I knew that if I did enough research and I thought about all the things that teachers would not like or maybe have some criticisms about, and I tried to confront those early on before I even started and figured out, you know, what would they not like, or did all those things, and then I knew that it would be successful. So I had to really think kind of far out, and I originally I thought of a kind of this 3-year plan. So,
okay.
So that was
okay,
my main,
3-year plan.
Yeah, my main goal.
Teachers all around the world, and I mean, I of course don't know them, but in my experience, the teachers who I've spoke to over the years, and if they're listening now, well, shame on you, because there's more important things to be doing. But no, there isn't when we're talking about the makerspace movement. They would be saying, and I think they would be saying this, 90%. The best moments when my kids are in that zone and we're having a really good time and there's learning going on,
yeah,
and maybe we don't need to label it or categorize it, is the moment that they take the theory from the book or however you've done it and they actually live it, they experience it. Experiential learning, they're using their hands and they're moving, or they're doing something to physically connect with it, because we're physical beings.
Yeah.
And I bet there's most of these teachers are thinking, a lot of them, they don't want to do that because the hassle of the resources and where they have to go to get it, and it just to put it all together, they could just do an easier lesson, show a video, something like that, and be done. Yeah. But the very point of this makerspace movement is it connects all of that together. You have a place, I was going to say, it should be repository. I was about to say suppository. I don't know why I keep saying suppository. You have this hub.
Yeah.
And I think it should be in every educational institution going. If we see the idea of a flower just comes into my head now. Well, I'm going silly now. Yeah. But the flower, the bit in the middle, which the petals all go around, that's your maker's space.
The
petals are the different classes and the subjects. Okay. And when it's needed, when they need to take that experiential learning from whatever you're teaching, whatever subject, they go to the maker's space.
It's the application, you know, like we're so missing that nowadays. We know all this theory and stuff like that, but then students need to apply something, they have a really hard time with it, because it's so foreign concept in their head, you know, they haven't actually seen it happen. And so, you know, we try to do videos as teachers or something like that, but it just doesn't resonate with the students. But like when you know, one of the teachers is doing she's cooking muffins and she's doing a writing unit on how to, and so they have to write, how do I cook a muffin with frosting on it or whatever, I guess, I don't know, in a cupcake, I guess you'd call it. And then they actually go and physically first cook the cupcake, and then they go back and write the directions on how to, and you're talking like lower elementary kids. And I mean, they've just gone and done a how-to writing sample, but then incorporated something simple as just baking into it, you know? And that's all can be done in the makerspace.
And it's wonderful, because I think there is, there's studies. The Japanese guy did this. They looked at the brain and how the brain was switched on when kids were on computer games as opposed to actually doing something physical and interacting. When they're on the computer, literally only like one area of the brain was lighting up. Mm-hmm. But when they were actually interacting with it physically, creatively, not through one lens, boom, 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 it was all lighting up.
Yeah.
And I think that's where real learning sticks. And you and I, we can say as friends, whatever we've learned in life, it's generally when we make a mistake.
Yep.
And by making that mistake, we've actually had to go on and make the mistake.
Yeah, yeah.
We've had to actually experience it.
That's really it's so important, because maybe that's why I gravitate towards a makerspace, is because I was one of those hands-on learners. When I actually did something, I remembered it versus us reading something or writing down something. And so it's so important. But going back to the mistake, that's the key, is making mistakes is where the kids are learning, and we're kind of having to retrain the brain on that too, because they're taught so many times that they have to be right all the time the first time. And so when they make a mistake, then they have to figure out how to overcome that mistake or try a different path, and they're not always given the answer in makerspace, which I think is also very important, and is also a challenge for them now, is because they've been so used to being spoon-fed the answers all the time. You know, you get it wrong, here's the answer, then go back and memorize it. But, you know, sometimes when they're building something or setting off on a project, you know, there's no clear end, you know, how to answer that issue. And so they have to, along the way, problem solve. And sometimes it doesn't turn out right. It's complete failure. And then they go and they learn something along the way. And the next time they apply, you know, I'm not going to do that next time. And it's so important. It's also why we're trying to get the students in there at a really early age, because they're growing up more of that, called the makerspace mentality of trial and error, or the design engineering process that we're labeling it now. And whereas the older kids almost have kind of that fixed mindset where they can't overcome those failures, or they can't think outside the box as easily as some of the younger kids.
Uh-huh.
So like, you know, your son's age at, you know, 5, 6, 7, that's a really great age, because their kids are creative and they're not afraid to make mistakes.
Yeah.
We were all at that age at one time, you know, building stuff and playing with Legos and dolls and all that stuff, and make believe, and we've somehow along the line we kind of go away from that and lose that. But we still, even as adults, we're still creative and we have these passions and things we want to do. But we've been in these institutions so long that we're told we don't know how to overcome those all the time. You know, we've been told this is the way we should be and how we have to be. And makerspace is kind of breaking that idea. So,
makerspace. This is China Jedi, people.
If you enjoy listening to the China Jedi podcast and want to get involved, either by asking a question, expressing your opinion, good or bad, light or dark, or even appearing as a special guest, then get in touch by emailing our team at info@chinajedi.com. That's info@chinajedi.com.
May the smile be with you.